2 Samuel 15. So, in the study of King David and his son, one son killed another son because that son had attacked his daughter. And so Absalom is exiled. He finally comes home. And when he gets home, there is tension between him and his dad. You know, this is one of those heartbreaking things that we see sometimes in families where one of the children rebels, and not just rebels, but actively seeks to hurt a parent. And that happens from time to time. But also let us remember that when we look at the events of the Bible, we have to look at it in light of what it means in our relationship with God. And in this situation here, I see those, or I think of those who at one point had given their lives to Christ. Maybe even on many of the ones I'm thinking of, had committed themselves to serve God in a capacity, maybe even as a pastor or a missionary. And then over the course of time, something happened and they turn against the church. You know, consider all these atheists out there. What is it that causes an atheist? We're in 2 Samuel 15. What is it that causes an atheist to be so dogmatic and militant against Jesus and the church? I don't believe in unicorns, but I don't spend all my time trying to disprove unicorns. I don't create, you know, a whole bunch of energy around that. I don't focus on things I don't believe in. And really the problem when we're dealing with a lot of people who are anti-Christ, anti-church, if we follow their story, at some point we'll find they were involved in church. Absalom here has come home, and David has forgiven him. Right? I see in the notes in my Bible it says David's half-hearted forgiveness of Absalom. I don't believe it was half-hearted. I think that's not a fair statement. The truth is that we can forgive people, and what does that mean? In fact, somebody caught me at the door after church last week and said, Pastor, told me a situation in his life, and he said, am I wrong for not wanting to be around my brother after what he's done? I said, absolutely not. Well, my family says I haven't forgiven him or I would want to be around him. And I express forgiveness means we're not pursuing revenge. Okay, can you accept that as a definition for forgiveness? Forgiveness doesn't mean that we lock arms and become best of friends again. Forgiveness means I'm not out to destroy you anymore. 2 Samuel 15. So that's the mindset that I want us to have when it comes to forgiveness. Has David forgiven Absalom? Sure he has. He's not trying to pursue him. He's not trying to kill him. But he's also not saying, son, come home for dinner. You know, there is a strained relationship. So why is that? How is it that we can forgive somebody, but we're not spending time with them right away? I miss him, but I don't want him here. That's what you were saying, right? Right? Love him from a distance. Sure, absolutely. That's right. You got to protect yourself. So while you can forgive them, you don't forget the patterns that cause you to have a strained relationship. Lack of trust. Right. Right. They feel like you're the one that's mad. And forgiveness, I've said several times, I'm not mad, I just don't care anymore. I'm not trying to hurt you, but I'm not trying to help you. I'm just trying to stay out of your way and you stay out of mine. That's it. I'm not trying to hurt you. That is the key to forgiveness. But understand something, and really the point comes down to this. And the same illustration I always use, if I cut my hand and I'm sorry I did that, am I still cut? Does it still take time for that to heal? It does. Same thing with the spirit and the heart. I can forgive you, but I'm cut. And it's going to take time for that to heal. And maybe at some point I'll get to a point in my recovery from that injury when I say, I'll try it. You know, I'll call, or I'll reach out, and I'll try to build this relationship. And I may learn early on that was a mistake. But forgiveness doesn't mean that we're now, you know, locking arms again. It just means I'm not trying to hurt you, okay? And that's where we are with David. David's forgiven it. He's not inviting him to the house, but he's not trying to hurt him. There was a time when Absalom fled. Why? Because David was so angry, and because Absalom had orchestrated the killing of David's other son, and at that point he was so angry, who knows what David might have done. But Absalom left, and of course over time, and we read it last week, David longed for Absalom, like you said. He longed for his son. He missed his son. And so now he's back in town, at his house, not in David's house. And so it came to pass after this, chapter 15, verse 1, 2 Samuel, that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses, 50 men to run before him. Absalom rose up early, stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, Absalom called to him and said, "Of what city art thou?" And he said, "Thy servant is of one of the tribes of Israel." And Absalom said, "See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputied of the king to hear thee." So David has forgiven Absalom. That's not the problem. But Absalom is out to destroy his father. This rebellion, this anger that he's got, appears to have no limit. And so he's standing in the gate as people come to see the king. Absalom intercepts them and tells them the problem with this city or the problem with this country is the king's not doing his job. That's his dad. And yet Absalom is out there doing this. And not only that, he's trying to attract attention, isn't he? Everywhere he goes, he's got an entourage of 50 people. And he's got chariots and horses, and he wants everybody to say, "Hey, who's coming? Must be important." You ever been around the presidential motorcade? Anybody ever seen that? All the motorcycles and the police cars and the ambulances and the black SUVs and all this attention. They shut down interstates to get them where they're going. Right? Racing through town, shutting down intersections. Well, let me ask you a question. What's a bigger target? That or throwing him in a station wagon? Right? You could put him in a station wagon. Nobody even look at that car. I don't know if they even make them anymore, but you know what I mean. Right, throw him in a minivan. There you go. A minivan drives through town. Nobody cares. Nobody even knows. But they do this. Why? Because it's posture. I won't say it's necessarily ego, but it's pomp and circumstance. Here's the president. And And so this is what Absalom is doing, is he's trying to attract attention and trying to garner respect and trying to get everybody to look at him as being somebody. And so he did that. And look at what it says in verse 6. On this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. He has won the affection, won the respect of the people of Israel. It came to pass after 40 years. Now, I don't know if you caught that, but that's a big number, isn't it? Does that mean he was 40 years old? It really is about the only thing that will fit in there is that Absalom was 40 years old when this happens. I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed to the Lord in Hebron. And so he goes on, he says, I vowed a vow. And the king says, so King David says, verse 9, go in peace. So he arose and he went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, ye shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. So he's positioned himself now to take over, to be a competing king against his father. And, you know, isn't that heartbreaking, dads in particular, that somebody would do something like that? And I mean, go back to what David did with, when Nathan confronted David about Bathsheba and what he had done. And what was God's statement through Nathan to King David regarding Bathsheba? If that had not been enough, I gave you Saul's house, I gave you his everything he had, I gave you the whole kingdom. If that was not enough, all you had to do is ask. And think about David now toward Absalom. If Absalom had come in from, you know, his exile and said to David, King David, Dad, I want more. I want to be more involved. I want to be more public. I want to have more authority. I want to have more opportunity. What do you think King David would have said to Absalom? Let's figure out a way to make that happen. But he didn't do that. Instead, he uses trickery and deceit and manipulation. And eventually now he's worked himself into this position. And now Absalom says in his mind, it's time. And he takes leave and goes into Hebron and he sends the spies and they're getting ready to announce that Absalom is king in Hebron. Verse number 12, Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices and the conspiracy was strong. The people increased continually with Absalom. There came a messenger to David saying the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. David said to his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise, let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. So David is convinced he's lost the battle. He's lost the country. You know, isn't this, I mean, that breaks my heart to think about a son who betrays his father to this degree. And then again, let's take it into a spiritual level. God says to us that had not been enough. All you had to do is ask. And yet, sometimes in our lives, we decide that we're not going to let God be God. We're going to compete with God in our lives. That we're going to choose our destiny. That we're going to determine our life. Instead of looking to God for direction, instead of trusting God for inspiration, we start to lay it out and manipulate and work things out so that we can reach that pinnacle of our goals and dreams, rather than asking God to show us the way. and make all things good. I've said many times that God has opened many doors for me. How many of you say God's opened doors for you? How many of you would say that you got to a door that you wanted to go in and God didn't open it and you kicked at it? Took a ram and busted through that thing like cops, right? Well, that's not in the Bible, but that is a saying. We have to participate, Brother Don. We do have to participate. But we also, but the thing is, we have to let God direct that. We have to trust God. We have to have God's direction. But I've busted through doors before and got in, looked around, and guess what? It was the ruin. It wasn't what God wanted. I had forced the door. I had made my own way, and it didn't work because it wasn't God's will. And that's, you know, Absalom is forcing himself into this position. And Saul has killed his thousands. David, his tens of thousands. David is valiant. David is a warrior. David is a strategist. He could win this battle. But it's a battle against his own son. So he says, I'm leaving. I won't fight my own son. So he grabs everybody and says, let's go. Verse 15, the king's servant said to the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. The king went forth and all his household after him. The king left 10 women, concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth and all the people after him and tarried in a place that was far off. All the servants passed on beside him, the Cherethites, Pelethites, Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place, abide with the king. Thou art a stranger and also an exile. Thou camest but yesterday. Should I this day make thee go up and down with us? Seeing I go where I may, return thou. Take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee. So the king says to Ittai, you're fresh in this country. You really don't need to choose sides and go with me. Go, just you're almost settled here. Go back and settle. You don't owe me any loyalty. And Ittai, verse 21, answered the king and said, as the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be. He said, I'm going to go with you. Does that remind you of another verse somewhere? Or another passage of scripture? Who? Ruth. I heard Peter also. And Peter, in the New Testament, Peter did. But remember Ruth and Naomi. Naomi said, go back to your people. You know, you need to go back to your people, marry one of your people, raise up a family over there. She goes, look, where you go, I go. Where you lodge, I lodge. Your God is my God. Your people are my people. And where thou diest, there will I be buried. That's where I'm going to. And that's that devotion. Well, Ittai had learned such a devotion for King David and such an affection for the king. He said, I'm going with you. But I don't know where I'm going. I don't care. I'm going with you. Verse 23, and the country wept with a loud voice. All the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron. Well, the Kidron Brook or the Kidron Valley runs right next to the old city of Jerusalem. We're not far from the city yet. We're basically just out of the city of David, maybe on the other side of the city from the city of David. Verse 24, Zadok also, and all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God. They set down the ark of God. Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said to Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city, If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he'll bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. I mean, you see what's happening is the whole city's defecting. They're all going with him. That's our king. We're going with him. We're not going to stand behind this rebel, this revolutionary. We're not going to go. We're going to go with the king. But David keeps saying, guys, you know, stay. If the Lord wants, I'll be back. I mean, even the Ark of God. No, take it. Go put it back in its place. That's not the Lord's will. I'll be back. And if it's not the Lord's will, we don't need the Ark of God out there who knows where. Put it back where it belongs. But he does say one thing to Zadok. He says, I need you, and you got a couple of assistants, and they've got sons. I need them to report to me if anything happens. Like, bring the news to me. So he has established some spies, if you will, in the city of Jerusalem. And that'll be important in a little while. And it's important, verse 31, one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. I mean, this was David's right-hand man. Then Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. Verse 33, unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, thou shalt be a burden to me. If thou return to the city and say to Absalom, I'll be thy servant, as I've been thy father's servant. So he establishes, he tells Hushai to go back and establish those spies there so they can report to the king. Chapter 16. David was a little past the top of the hill. Behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him. Who's Mephibosheth? The son of Jonathan, the grandson of Saul. Mephibosheth is the one who's been brought into David's house, and he said, I'm giving you back everything that belonged to your father, your grandfather. But you will eat at my table. Mephibosheth, he was nobody. He was forgotten. David brought him back. And now the servant of Mephibosheth shows up with animals and bread and raisins and fruit and wine. And David says, what's this? He said, well, it's for y'all. Verse 3, the king said, where is thy master's son? Ziba said to the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Now, Mephibosheth later, you remember, says, that's not what happened, king. That's not the way it was said. But Ziba tells a story that Mephibosheth thinks he's going to get back on the throne of Saul. Remember, Mephibosheth can't walk. So it doesn't make sense for him to be going with David anyway. But did he actually have the idea that he would be king again? Don't know. All we know in what the Bible tells us is what Ziba said and what Mephibosheth says. It doesn't tell us which one was telling the truth. But the idea here that possibly Mephibosheth was hoping to become king again. And then we find the cousin here in chapter 16, verse 5. King David came to Bahurim. Behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed still as he came. He cast stones at David and all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand, on his left. And thus says Shimei when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, thou man of Belial. So in other words, he's calling David every unkind word he can think of. Call him a devil. Verse 8, the Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. Behold, thou art taken in thy mischief because thou art a bloody man. And he just fussing at him. Just again, let's get the picture. Here's David, his family, his people, with what they could gather up to take with them. Walking out of town with tears in their eyes and broken hearts. And then comes along Shimei to kick them when they're down. Verse 9, Abishai, son of Zeruiah, said unto the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head." Y'all got any friends that are that faithful to you? He said, "That ain't right. That ain't right. He shouldn't be talking to you that way. He shouldn't be hollering at you that way, showing you disrespect. I'll go there right now and take his head off." See? That's a good friend, isn't it? Verse 10, the king said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? Let him curse. Because the Lord has said to him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so?" He said, David says, you know, Shimei thinks he's doing the right thing. Who am I to question? In other words, what does that say to you? His response, what does that say to you? Let the Lord handle it. Say it again. His fight was gone, wasn't it? His fight was, he was so defeated, he didn't want to fight. He didn't want to challenge. He didn't want to fight his son. He didn't want to fight Shimei. He stood there and just cussed at him, and David said, "It's just words. It doesn't matter." Are we really going to let that upset us? Remember what Jesus said, "In your patience, you possess your soul." Our self-control, our self-discipline, the ability not to get baited into a fight. But that's, and David's just like, he's just done. He's not going to fight. Well, you're here. We're working on it. Verse 11. David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my son, which came forth out of my bowel, seeks my life. How much more may this Benjamite do it?" So you understand? You understand what's going on in my life? You understand my son is trying to kill me? You really think anything else matters? You really think I care what he has to say? You really think it matters to me what's going on in his life? I mean, what's he going to do more than my son was willing to do? That's right. Well, and it's not, I mean, it's not even a big issue compared to what I'm going through. That doesn't even matter. You ever sit here and listen to all the prayer requests and you came in thinking you had trouble, and after you heard the prayer request, you went, "Hey, I don't have any troubles at all." Right? Look around. Man, we're so blessed. Life is so good. God is so good to us, and we've got it good. Not to say he's not good to them too, but they're going through a journey right now that we don't want to be in. And so we look at our lives, we say, "Hey, I got it pretty good. I got nothing to complain about." That's where David is. He looks at Abishai, he goes, "You know my son's trying to kill me? You think I care what he has to say?" In fact, I don't know how you are, but when that kind of stuff starts going, I just tune it out. I don't even hear it anymore. Because if I listen to it, we looked at Ecclesiastes Wednesday, and that's one of the things that he said. He said, "Be careful not to take to heart every word that's spoken, because if you listen to everything, if you try to pay attention to everything, it's going to occur to you that people are talking bad about you. Even people that you consider your friends are talking bad about you sometimes. And so he says, don't take it to heart. And he says, and by the way, don't act like you've never done it. Don't act like you never talk bad about people. Right? Now what he said in Ecclesiastes Wednesday night. So here's David, and the issue before him, number one, he doesn't know where he's going. Now he's got all these people. Who are all those people counting on to lead them in the right direction? Right? David's got his own trouble, but he's still got responsibilities. Not because he chose responsibility, but because they followed him. That's one of the things he said to Ittai. If you go with me, man, this is going to be one more person I got to take care of. So, verse 13, Shimei went along all the hills, hillside over against him, cursed as he went, threw stones, cast dust. I mean, he was throwing a fit, wasn't he? And then the shot goes back to Jerusalem. David's on his way out. Words come. He's left. Back in the city of Jerusalem with those that are left, we hear the announcement. Absalom is king in Hebron. Verse 16, it came to pass when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, was come to Absalom. Hushai said to Absalom, God save the king. God save the king. And Absalom said to Hushai, is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? Right? He said, hold on a second. Isn't it interesting how Absalom sees that? You're supposed to be loyal to your friend. Well, you're his son and you're not. What kind of friend are you? To be here, you should be out there with him. I mean, he sees a little something. Something's not exactly adding up. And Absalom said to Hushai, verse 17, is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? And Hushai said to Absalom, nay, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his will I be, and with him will I abide. Verse 21, Ahithophel said to Absalom, go to thy father's concubines, which he has left to keep the house. And all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. So they spread Absalom a tent on top of the house. Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. So there's the depth of depravity in the heart of Absalom and his counselors has exceeded that of which anyone might have thought. And when it says in the sight of all Israel, I just have to take it at face value and say that's exactly what it means. And obviously, as we go from a king who's a man after God's own heart with some faults, right? We don't dismiss his faults, to this kind of display of debauchery, Israel is in quite a pivot point here. You know, as we look at our country and what goes on here, there are obvious points at which we're going to go one way or the other. This battle that continues to rage, those who forcefully and loudly exhibit a desire to be able to kill babies before they're born and pushing it. And those, you know, that's the issue. You know, if we're going to try to pull back some votes, there are people, yes, the economy and, you know, all these things are wrong. And so we need somebody else in there. And then they go and they go, oh, but hang on a second. What about the right to kill your baby before it's born? And that makes people turn. That one thing. And you talk about the depth of depravity, unconscionable But that is the big issue when it comes to elections in this country, that a lot of politicians pull out, and it has the country divided. How can we be divided on this issue? But we are somehow. Things have changed. So we go to chapter 17. And we're out of time, so we'll just kind of wrap it up. Ahithophel says to Absalom, let me get an army together and go kill David. And he says, okay, sounds like a good idea. Let's ask Hushai what he thinks. So he goes to Hushai. Remember, Hushai is David's actual friend, but he's back at the palace. Hushai, what do you think we should do? Well, I don't think we should go in there and, you know, make a big show. I think we just need to kind of lay low and, you know, have some strategy, and we'll come across David sometime when he's not expecting it, and we'll get him. That's all. And so he says, okay, I think that's a good idea. We'll do what you said instead of what Ahithophel said. And Ahithophel, now look at where he is. Ahithophel has betrayed the king. He's really the one behind all this whole thing with Absalom, trying to get Absalom to be king. He's the driving force behind it and the enabler. And then when Absalom doesn't accept his counsel, what does he do? He killed himself. He went home and killed himself in chapter 17. I mean, this is somebody who was really trying to be the puppet master of the country. And when he saw that his plan was spoiled, he was just done with life. And so that's what he did. Yes, he did. And then guess what happens in chapter 18? Absalom. Remember Absalom? He had this beautiful hair. What was that guy's name? Was it Fabio? Is that the right one? Yeah. Right, that model or what? It had all that hair. Right, so he had all that hair, and he's riding along, and guess what happens? His hair got caught in the branches of an oak tree, and his hair is so thick and so caught up in there, he's hanging above the ground by his hair. Well, hanging from your hair won't kill you, but it makes it hard to get down, doesn't it? And there's a young man who sees that, and he says, that's Absalom. And he runs back and tells Joab, hey, Absalom's stuck in a tree. His hair's all caught up in the tree. And Joab said, did you kill him? And he said, no, I didn't kill him. He's the king. Not only is he the king, he's David's son. I'm not going to kill David's son. Of all that we've been through, that's still David's son. You see how a father thinks? And so Joab says, well, I don't have any affection for him. And he went out there, took three darts and threw it and killed him. And then he got his servants to go finish the job. And so Absalom is dead. So it comes time to go and tell the king. And what do they do? In verse 19 of chapter 18, Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, said, let me now run and bear the king tidings. Joab says, no. It's not a good day for you to run and tell the king. This is, you know, you're a priest and you shouldn't be doing that. And so, but then what does Joab do? He appoints somebody else to do it. And Ahimaaz says, well, can I at least go with him? He said, yeah, you can go with him. So Ahimaaz outruns him, the other guy. Ran so fast, he got there first, right? Again, John and Peter, right? Reminds us of the tomb. But when Ahimaaz gets there, and they say, there's somebody running this way, a messenger. And David said, well, if it's one person, it's probably good news. And so he got there, and he says, what's going on? What's the message? He said, well, he says, all is well. And he says, I heard some talk and some chatter, but I really don't know what the news is. He's the one who wanted to tell. He ran and got there first, and then when he got there, he was afraid to tell. He got to thinking about it. He thought, this is not... You see the balance here? I mean, really give this some thought. He wanted to tell the king, because it's good news, the king can go home. On the balance, it's bad news because the king's son is dead. And he wants to tell the king, but when he gets there, after he decides it's not a good thing to share. We've done that, haven't we? We thought, ooh, I just can't wait to tell him. And then we got there and we said, you know what? I just, thinking about it, I can't tell him. And so then the other servant got there and he said, did you have something to share? He says, yeah. He said, it's good news. He said, well, is Absalom alive? And the messenger said, it'd be good for you if all your enemies were in the state that Absalom's in. He's dead. And the king wept. Go ahead. Right. Yeah, when the messenger came and said Saul was dead, he said, and I killed him. But the truth is, Saul fell on his own sword. And he thought he was going to get praise. Instead, he got relocated. All right, let's take a break.